The thing I'm having is I just bought a stupid wireless mouse.
But can I do that with Wi-Fi?
Now my screensaver doesn't work.
And that's the solution I'm looking for.
Yep, that would be it.
Something that they call drive-by download.
Okay, stop there.
Try to boot into something called safe mode. Take my advice and go get this free program that is out of this world.
Eliminate those and see if the problem still persists.
Oh, that's a great idea. Okay, I didn't think about that.
Does your computer bite?
There's nothing that comes in the computer that's of any value.
Has your hard drive gone floppy?
The head whack is the thing that makes you kind of go,
don't! It's time to call the Computer Corner.
We're not your daddy's computer radio show.
Is this thing on?
On News Talk 92.3. KTAR.
And welcome to another edition of the Computer Corner as I blow my headphones up, reaching for the on-off button here. It is the Data Doctors along with Lewis from Mac Media talking about technology as we do every Saturday afternoon. And apparently, most recently, I always talk about these headphones, don't I?
Well, that one was pretty nice. It just came right off your head.
It just
head
exploded
and
as, yeah. as I read, reached for the button there.
Do you think a couple computer guys could afford a good set?
Well, I have a good set. I just keep forgetting to bring them in. In fact, the station provided these lovely Sony professional headphones, and I bring them in from time to time, and
And you're hoarding them.
What are you going to do? They're awesome on an iPhone, though.
Oh, well, I'm sure.
Or an iPod or anything. They're great.
The DJ set.
Anyway. Thanks for joining us once again. We're here to talk tech for the next couple of hours, try to help some folks out with their problems. In general, we call it edutainment. We try to educate and entertain you at the same time, because if we just sat here and talked about computers and technology all the time and not had some fun with it, it would be boring. Maybe not for you, but certainly for us. After 15 years of talking about computers on the air, we gotta spice it up and have some fun. So if you're new to the show, welcome. If you're an old-timer, thanks. And if you're an old-timer that's never called in, what are you waiting for?
Now's the time.
602-277-5827. Whether you have come on. When's the last time you ran into somebody that had absolutely no questions or no problems with technology?
Well, I've got questions, and you've
got
questions.
Yeah, we're in the business,
so.
Right? But I mean, it doesn't. Unless you're a complete Luddite and have absolutely nothing that has an on-off switch.
And you can start it off with this, I have a real stupid question, because that's how they normally start out the sentence.
Well, there are no stupid questions on this show.
Well, that's the response.
Just the stupid people, right?
Yeah, stupid answers quite a bit.
Still or trying stupid to, headphones.
Stupid headphones.
Hey, I got it to connect. So anyway, 602-277-5827, and frankly, there are no stupid questions, and there are certainly no stupid people that call this show. Everybody that calls this show is Mensa quality, top-notch, the cream of the crop. The top 1%ers are the only ones that call in to this fine show.
Well, they've been listening to you for a decade.
Are they more smarter from it? If you want to join us online, check out our digital presence, datadoctors.com, and then put a little slash, and then the word radio. It'll take you right to today's show. We generally try to bring some resources and some topics that you may or may not participate in. Today's topic, I think, is relevant. I've been kind of a pundit of the netbook computer, which is a small form factor, light duty kind of internet terminal, if you will, that looks like a laptop. My reasons for being a pundit and kind of a naysayer for this particular device is we've seen other iterations of this in the past that have all gone down in flames. Remember the network computer?
Mm-hmm.
Right? It was just nothing more than a window to a network, whether it's the internet or corporate network, that kind of thing. But things have changed. Things have changed quite a bit. The whole concept of cloud computing, which means the internet is referred to as the cloud. That information that's out there that's invisible to all of us, but it's out there. That when we connect, just in general, we refer to that as the cloud. And so cloud computing has to do with the fact that how many of you folks out there have a Gmail account? Raise your hands. Gmail? Anyone? There you go. All right? Lots of you raising your hands. Well, the Gmail system, the stuff that you do on that account, the messages that are saved, all of that, the reason you can go from any computer and connect to your Gmail account is because it all resides on Google's servers. It's in the cloud. So you're already participating in cloud computing if you use Gmail, Yahoo Mail, Hotmail, or Windows Mail, that I call it now, any of those kinds of things. If you use Google Documents, you're computing in the cloud. If you use Google's or Yahoo's scheduling program or, you know, their contact management systems, or if you use Salesforce, very common in businesses for contact management, or customer relations management, CRM, I guess they call it, you're computing in the clouds. So you're going to, more and more of us are starting to move into that. You know, most of you now have figured out it's a pretty good idea for me to share my photos on a photo sharing website for a couple of reasons. One, it gives me a backup. Two, it gives me an easy way to have high quality video or photographs available to my friends and family. I don't have to go through this nightmare of email.
Yeah, don't have to email to every person. You just share, send a link, and you're good.
In fact, as we go down this road and we talk about social media and the cloud computing and all this thing, this whole notion of email, which John Dvorak, that's the link in this week's newsletter, one of my favorite guys in all of the media, the cranky geek, John C. Dvorak, has the 9 reasons why email is irrelevant, basically done. And most of us are kind of fed up with it. I think one of the reasons why Twitter is becoming such a popular way to communicate is all of the issues that we have with email, with spam and junk and all that stuff. That ability to communicate with the people we want to communicate with without all that garbage.
Well, they call the U.S. Postal Service snail mail, so I think that's kind of what email is almost turning into in a way, because a lot of these other services are so much quicker, and they just pop up instantaneously, and an email is kind of a thing you have to go back and look at.
Well, it's a bigger problem for me. It's weeding through all the garbage to get to the handful of things that you actually want to get.
It's the same thing in the mailbox.
Exactly. So as time goes on, we all want to communicate. The internet is how we're going to communicate. This notion of email as being a primary communication system, it's not quite going the way of the fax machine, but, you know, when did the fax machine become irrelevant for most of us? When email came around, right? So what's going to come around that's going to make email less relevant? Not irrelevant. We still use the traditional fax machine from time to time in our business.
Yeah, sometimes right. You have to because right. You need a hard copy for whatever reason. Or the person on the other end doesn't know how to use email. And
yeah. Or you're dealing with what they call, what's the technical term, Neanderthals? No, I'm just kidding. You know what's amazing to me in the real estate world, specifically commercial real estate, how far behind, I mean, this was before the downturn. So now they have an excuse, well, we can't afford any technology. What was the excuse before? I mean, the number of people that I've dealt with in the commercial real estate world that tell me, well, no, I can't email it to you. I got to fax it to you. It's like, what?
Well, I think the excuse back then was always you need a true signature.
Well, I mean, I get that. But I'm talking about just simple communications, trying to get information back and forth anyway. So
sure.
The lines are full, and we appreciate everybody hanging on because we're going to get right to the phones here after this first break. But 602-277-5827. I'm giving you the number now, but I don't want you to dial it because you're going to get frustrated.
I thought that was going to go a different direction
for a
second.
So when you hear somebody hang up after the break, that's the number you dial. Or if you want to chime in. Now, we want those folks that are out there. There are a lot of early adopters of the netbook that I heard from. I asked through Twitter a couple of times last week, anybody out there using a netbook as their primary computing device? And I was surprised how many people said, yeah, actually I am. So if you're one of those, please chime in either through the phone or online, datadoctors.com/radio. You'll see the feedback section, general comments. Give us your wisdom. Those of you that have gone out, you've purchased a netbook, whether you like it, love it, hate it, whatever the situation is, your experience with this new type of product, I think is going to be very helpful for those that are out there looking. You know, it's a cheap priced computer. Is it right for me? Well, that's the whole point of today's discussion, along with whatever it is that's ailing you. It is the Data Doctors and Lewis from Mac Media Inn to help you with your technology. Stay tuned for more. Hang tight.
Titan Auto Insurance has down payments as low as $37 and flexible payment plans. Call Titan at 1-800-848-2687 for affordable auto insurance with personal service.
If you've been waiting for 30-year fixed rates to come down into the low fives, the wait is over. For a limited time, First Option Lending is able to offer a 30-year fixed rate as low as 5% with an APR as low as 5.9. Don't wait. In this yo-yo economy, rates could shoot back up into the sixes literally overnight. Call First Option Lending right now. Finally, you can eliminate your credit card bills, skip your next 2 mortgage payments, and pay off other debt. Stimulate your economy with extra cash in your pocket every month. Please don't wait. This 5% rate is subject to immediate change. Call First Option Lending now or apply online in minutes at firstoptiononline.com. First Option Lending, 480-751-3400, 751-3400.
First Option Lending, the people you call first.
480-751-3400.
Ah, the sounds of spring. A lawn being mowed. The season's first allergy attack. And the sound of people changing their allergy medicine from Claritin to Allivert. They've discovered Allivert gives them the 24-hour non-drowsy relief they need. Relief even Claritin can't beat at a much better price. It's spring. It's time to switch your allergy medicine to Allivert. A good change to make.
Use as directed. Price comparison based on IRI data as of 11-208. Brands are trademarks of their respective owners.
Credit card companies can beat you down to collect past due bills. The collection calls come at all times of the day. They pressure you and push you. Financial Consulting Services wants you to know there is a way out without filing for bankruptcy. There are secret programs that credit card companies don't reveal to the average consumer. Financial Consulting Services wants to give you the information about these programs for free. In fact, Financial Consulting Services is offering a free personal one-on-one consultation when you call this toll-free number. If you are drowning in credit card debt, be sure and call this number now to secure your free one-on-one consultation. 800-917-3145. That's 800-917-3145. Lori writes, being on this program has given me a huge sense of relief. Kim says, I haven't stopped dancing. You've taken a huge weight off my shoulders. For your free consultation, call now. 800-917-3145. That's 800-917-3145.
You know, brand new cars come with big new payments. And right now, with the economy having a bad hair day, you want to keep the car you got running stronger for longer. Advance Auto Parts. They make it easy to keep your ride running right with offers like 5 quarts of Pennzoil or Quaker State conventional motor oil and a Purolator Premium Plus oil filter for $14.99. Get the oil and filter, and they'll sweeten the deal with $2 off any air or cabin air filter. Whatever you're working on, Advance Auto Parts will help you keep the wheels turning.
Hey, y'all, times are tough. You know that. What am I, Rosie now? Hey, y'all.
They're going to start rapping to that beat.
Oh, no. No, I can't.
Can't flow like that?
No.
Got to watch some rap movies later.
I am from the wrong era, my friend. Anyway, it is, the times are tough out there, and the notion of a $300 to $400 computer, portable computer, looks like a laptop, pretty enticing.
And it's new.
And it's new. And it's, and a lot of people are talking about it, so shouldn't I buy one? I'm in the market for a new computer. Heck, that's much better than $1,000 or $800 or $1,200.
It depends what you're doing.
Exactly. This new category of technology known as a netbook, which is designed for those that primarily live on the internet. So if you generally just surf the web and your email program is, or your email system is a web-based email system like Gmail or Yahoo, you don't need to do any real heavy number crunching. You don't have to do, you're certainly not into gaming. That kind of, that's what the netbook is really designed for. But rather than me tell you about it, we want to invite those of you out there that have a netbook, have purchased one, give us your 2 cents. Most of the response I've gotten so far from people that have purchased them has been very positive. Now, I don't know if that's because they understood what they were buying and didn't make a mistake of saying, well, wait a minute, I thought this was just like a laptop, because it's not like a standard notebook or standard laptop. So later on the show, we're going to talk about the rumors that Apple's coming out with something very similar to a netbook somewhere down the road.
Possibly.
Possibly, yeah. To the phones, let's see if we can't help Joey. Joey, you're first up on the computer corner. You have tremendous amounts of knowledge at your fingertips. How can we help you?
Well, it's my daughter's computer, and I've had trouble with... You know, every time I go in, they're always opening up new pages and, you know, links to here and here. So they're always having, you know, 27, 30 pages open all the time, which I don't know if that's the cause, but their computer really slows down.
Well,
how old
are we talking? What age group are we talking?
5 or 6 years.
5 or 6 years old?
No, my daughters are 8, 9, 9, and 10.
Okay, so they're right at the edge of the time period where things are about to get. You think it's out of control now? Wait till they hit their teen years.
Well, the kids are almost as old as the computer.
Yeah, well, almost.
Yeah, computer's about 5 years old. The kids are about 8 years old, right?
Yeah, they're due for an upgrade for sure.
Well, Well, I mean, and you hit on something that probably has nothing to do with your question, but as a parent, I mean, my kid, I'm on the downhill swing. My daughter's 19, my son's almost 16, so I've kind of been where you're going.
Yeah.
Them understanding that their behavior is the number one reason that dad's going to be upset and have to spend money is critically important lesson that you try to get them to understand while you still have some possibility of them looking up to you as a authority figure. Because if they get into their teens because their appetite for whatever's new is insatiable, right? And they have no fear, and they don't, you know, and at 8 and 9, they're probably already kind of halfway there, right? And so a couple of things you may want to think about doing is you can put software in after you get to the point where this machine's working again, or even the new machine. get software in there that will at least mitigate some of those options and some of those issues automatically for you. There's a great program out there called K9 Web Protection. Unfortunately, it's only for Windows at this point. They keep talking about bringing a Mac version out, but right now it's just for Windows. It's absolutely free. It's from a company that basically specializes in corporate content control, so it's like really high-end stuff. But this is like their community, giving back to the community project that they have, this K9 Web Protection. So not only will it block out the obvious, you know, adult materials, but it's really good at identifying websites that have malicious code on them and blocking those as if they were an adult site. And that's where most of that grief is going to come from. Your kids are going to go, oh, this is cool. I want to watch this video, whatever. And they're not thinking about, well, this could be a trap. You know, they're innocent about, naive about this stuff. And there are a lot of traps out there. And you could be in the business if you're not paying attention. They're going to get you.
It's amazing what they find. I mean, my 9-year-old, almost 10, she's like a YouTube queen.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
She finds all the Jonas Brothers videos.
That's their version of TV. Right? Yeah. When we were 8 and 9, it was Saturday morning cartoons, right?
Yeah.
YouTube is their version of, you know, what was big for us. So anyway, so you decided, you know, you're using all these different restore possibilities from the past, and they've always worked, but this time not so much, huh?
Yeah, you know, usually their computer really slows down, and, you know, we have high-speed internet, so, I mean, the computer usually is very fast. So when it really starts to bog down and it's not working great, I'll go in, I don't have... you know, these fancy, you know, virus protection things or, you know, spyware or anything. So I usually go in, I'll try to clear out all the, you know, the history and everything to free up some space on the computer. And like I said, none of this might be relevant. It's just what I think works. I'll go to the system, restore it to a point like a month ago when I know it was working fine.
So you're using the built-in Windows Wayback Machine where you can, like, pretend like it's a month ago, okay?
Yep. And, you know, it doesn't matter. Your screensaver, everything changes to exactly that month ago.
Right.
And typically, it's always solved the problem.
That works until it doesn't.
Yeah, and then it didn't. So I decided, let's just do a complete system recovery, which is basically telling your computer, start this computer like I just opened it up out of the box. It wipes everything off. Well,
and it didn't work out. I'm going to put you on hold for a second. I apologize. We're coming up on a break here. We're going to continue that conversation because that's a very common scenario, and hopefully from Joey's pain, you will learn maybe what to or what not to do the next time. It is the Computer Corner. Got about an hour and a half left of Tech Talk. We're talking about netbooks versus notebooks as our topic. Lots of resources at datadoctors.com/radio. Or, of course, you can join us 602-277-5827, but only after you hear somebody hang up. We got a whole lot more to go. Stay tuned. And welcome back to the Computer Corner. We're comparing netbooks to notebooks and trying to make sure that those of you in the market for a new computer that get enticed by somebody with a very clever sales pitch about this new kind of computer that's really cheap and it's portable, want to make sure that you understand what you're getting yourself into. For instance, none of them that I've seen have any kind of what's called an optical drive.
Those tend to be external, I think.
Yes. Right? So there's no, and when I say optical drive, I'm talking about CD, DVD, that kind of thing. It's a netbook. It's made to connect to the internet, and it's like a window to the world. Doesn't mean you can't buy an external CD player, CD-ROM, DVD, that kind of thing, but that adds now cost to the device. And so I'm starting to see people go, yeah, these netbooks are great, and they're buying, and then they're buying all these accessories, and they're ending up with the exact same thing as if they'd had a notebook with less processing power.
Well, the CD-ROMs alone are $89 to $99.
Oh, they can be much higher than that depending upon whose brand you're buying.
Right.
So you got to really look at the big picture there. Some of these netbooks last about two and a half hours on their battery. Some will last 5, maybe 6 hours. Big deal, right? If you're taking these because you're going on a road trip and you want to be able to watch movies and what have you, probably not a good fit. You know, especially if you get a combination of that, I got to have the external. Now you're on the plane, you got to pull the netbook out, pull the external CD-ROM drive out, and then you got to hope the battery lasts long enough to get through the movie.
Well, and then a lot of these new ones are also coming with the solid-state hard drive, so the hard disk space is very small.
Yeah, actually, most of them are not using solid-state because it's too expensive. Only the folks over at Apple who don't seem to care about the price of anything.
I've seen some coming with 32-gig solid-state drives, 16-gig.
The ones that I'm seeing are in the 160-gigabyte range,
okay.
Traditional magnetic hard drives, because they're so much cheaper. I mean, remember, the whole thing is to try to cut costs. So if you're out there, you have a netbook, you have your 2 cents to chime in on, please, we'd love to hear from you. 602-277-5827 or go to the website datadoctors.com/radio. And you can give us your 2 cents via the feedback form that's there. So check that out. All right. Before we went to break, though, we were in the middle of having this discussion with Joey. He's got kids. The kids routinely cause the computer to get real slow. Joey says, rather than mess around with anything, I'm just going to restore and go back to a previous point. Or if it gets really bad, I just tell the compact system to just wipe it out and put it back to the way it was the day I got it. And in the past, Joey, that's worked for you.
Yes.
This most recent time you tried it, it didn't.
So
the reason it didn't is probably due to the fact that, one, the machine is getting along in years. You said it's about 5 years old. So there's a possibility you have some kind of a hardware issue so that when it tried to do the restore and was writing information to your hard drive, because of a bad memory module, bad motherboard, bad power supply, bad whatever, or even a bad sector on the hard drive, it corrupted the operating system. You're now in this deadly spiral loop, right, where you try to start Windows, it looks like it's going to start, and then it says, no, I'm having a problem, and then it reboots.
Yeah.
So, and no matter how many times you restart it, you try turning it off, you leave it off for a while thinking, that's the mojo, that's going to bring it back. Something magical, the hard drive fairy will come overnight, and none of that's worked.
Nothing at all.
So what you want to do at this point, so one of the first things we're going to do when you bring that into our shop is we're going to see if we can boot to what's called safe mode. Okay, and that's a diagnostic mode that's built into Windows. Under normal circumstances, when you load Windows, all the stuff that you've installed over the last 2 or 3 or 4 years, Windows installs all of that along with it. So like your printer drivers and your fancy video card drivers and your network drivers and everything that you need to be able to be a fully functional computer. Safe mode is a way for us in the business to diagnose a problem by telling Windows only load the bare minimums. So I don't care about fancy video. I don't care about anything other than I just want you to get to the point where I can click on the start button. It's going to look ugly. Now, if you're able to get to safe mode, you probably got a shot at just cleaning this thing up and not being, you know, in a big world of hurt. If a machine will not boot to safe mode, if you're still getting that cyclical kind of booting action, you have something that's going to require somebody that has above average skills to understand the best way to evaluate how to either clean it up or start over again. The real problem for you is, because it's a 5-year-old compact, when you first got it, you didn't make the CDs that they say to make, right?
Yes.
So you don't have those. That's usually the fallback position, because those old compacts, they put the restore into a special partition, but those partitions get corrupted, hard drives crash, that kind of thing. So having those CDs is the way to kind of reboot and restart. So that would be the first thing. You're not in front of your machine, unfortunately, so we can't really kind of take it much further than that. You got to figure out, am I in safe mode, or can I get to safe mode or not? And then once you're there, unless you know how to manipulate Windows, I'm not sure, you know, what else you can do with other than get one of your techie friends or take it to a professional organization to have them look at it. But you got to figure out how bad this machine is, and then you got to figure out, do I want to spend money or time or effort getting it fixed, or, you know, it's 5 years old, maybe it's time to move to a new computer.
Yeah. Now, what was the process for safe mode on startup?
Generally, if you just start tapping the F8 key, or in most cases, if you just hold down the left shift key while it's starting up.
And then if you can get to safe mode.
Well, it'll come up, and generally it'll ask you it depends on which version of Windows you have, but basically it'll come up either with a menu that says which version of safe mode, you want safe mode command prompt, you want just regular safe mode, or it won't even ask you at all. It'll just go right into this really ugly version of Windows. That's okay. What you're hoping for, because then you have more options. If you can't get into safe mode, that means you got some major corruption. So somebody, you know, with the brain surgery skill set is going to have to get in there and help you.
Okay, so if I got safe mode, I can probably fix it, you know, with less cost. If I can't get it to safe mode, it's probably going to be a little more expensive, and it might just be worth me thinking about upgrading.
I'm not sure that the cost will be much different if you're going to employ a professional, because it's a function of time. It's just the complication of figuring out what to do or what's going to be involved. In other words, that safe mode means might be able to clean it up instead of having to reload.
Yeah.
If it won't go into safe mode, then it probably means there's not only was there a corruption during the installation, there was a cause to that corruption. Now you got to spend the time to figure out where that cause is so that it doesn't creep back up on you.
Yeah. And
nothing worse than getting this thing working and then a month later, blah, all over again, right?
Yeah.
Especially if you spend money. All right, so your next task is to figure out, can I boot to safe mode? So then you know that's the fork in the road.
Okay.
All right?
Very good. I appreciate it.
Hey, good luck with that.
Thank you.
And hopefully that will at least give him the next steps there. 602-277-5827. You can call in and talk to us, like Lee, who's got a machine that, let's call it an angry spirit at this point, huh, Lee?
Okay.
It takes how long for this machine to start up?
Over 13 minutes.
Over 13 minutes. So you got enough time to almost make like a pot of coffee.
I usually do.
Let's see. And then boiling the water takes 4 minutes.
I've worked it all into my schedule.
French press, right? You're going to pour it in there because you could ground it 4 minutes before you press it. So, I mean, you got a nice solid cup of coffee before that thing boots up, huh? And this happened over a period of time. When was the last time it actually booted reasonably well?
It's been several months that it was. I noticed that it was 4, 5, 6 minutes.
Okay, and then suddenly, all of a sudden, it's just three times as long.
Well, maybe not suddenly. Somewhat gradually. I just got used to it, so I just.
Oh, just
you know, I didn't seem to have any security issues, and it runs fine when it gets booted. So I just.
Yeah, 5 became 6, 6 became 7. Here we are at 13.
Probably something. Like
okay.
That, yeah.
Well, one of the most common reasons we see that jump up is a security program, an antivirus program, or something of that nature that had a major upgrade. Okay, so it went from asking Windows to juggle, you know, 3 or 4 balls to asking Windows to juggle 10 or 12.
Mm-hmm.
In the past, Norton Antivirus, McAfee, all the big major brands were notorious for this kind of activity. They'd have some update, especially if you're running one of these all-inclusive, do-everything internet security suites.
No, we got AVG free.
Okay, and do you have any kind of anti-spyware programs in there?
Yeah, I've got several of those, but I don't have them running because they draw too much processes, so I shut them down during the week. And
how about any other internet security, like firewalls and that kind of thing?
I've got a firewall, and I've got a
What firewall program?
NAGNI Anthem or something like that.
Okay. That would be the first thing that I would disable.
Okay.
Because that's one of those programs I'm talking about. The firewall programs, as they do updates, I've seen this a lot, it kind of gets screwed up during the update.
Okay.
And so it's basically what's one of the reasons why, because you said you only had 41 processes, right? So you don't have a lot of excessive processes. You got, you know, maybe 8 or 10 more than, because you said you already disabled 5 or 6.
Yeah.
Okay, so you might have been at 45, which is about 8 to 10 higher than we like to see from a clean machine. It sounds like what you have is a typical situation where Windows is booting. It's in its little directions from all the programs that have been installed. One of the programs says, install me here. And it says, okay, your turn. And it waits. And it's waiting for that program. And the program's waiting for Windows. And the Windows is waiting for that program. And they both have to get to what's called a timeout period before it'll move on. It's like, okay, it's not going to work. And that typically, when you don't have a lot of processes running, but you have this really, really, really long startup time, there's this kind of timeout period that's going on that programs, Windows is waiting for somebody else probably waiting for Windows, and kind of there you have it. So the way you can kind of try to, if you want to try to diagnose this yourself, you said that you're familiar with the MS config utility where you go in and start removing things.
Mm-hmm.
You can certainly do that, even with stuff that you know is important. That you do want to run MS config when you turn off things in startup, that's not a permanent fix. It's just a diagnostic tool. So what you would do is start doing that combination of things, or you can uncheck everything, right? Mm-hmm. Have it boot and say, okay, well that booted at 6 minutes, or no, it's still booting at 13. Okay, and that means you have a problem deep in the registry that MS config is not going to help you with.
Okay.
So you got to try to figure out where this is going on, but based on just this over the phone description, the fact that you don't have 70 or 80 processes running, because that would typically be very obvious why it's taken 15 minutes.
Sure.
41, there's something going on there. You got two pieces of software kind of duking it out, and Windows is kind of waiting on the side, waiting for them to, are you guys done with your tantrum?
Yeah.
And then finally lets it start up.
Okay.
All right?
All righty. Thank you very much.
Hey, good luck with that.
Thank you.
And it's the fun of Windows.
Well, you lost me there.
Yeah, well. It's because you guys over the Apple world don't have this problem. 602-277-5827. We're going to go to break. It's Ken and Kevin from Data Doctors and Lewis from Mac Media, Inc. back after this. Working our way through another unbelievably gorgeous afternoon here in the great Southwest. We thank you for joining us wherever you are out there in the world, whether you're here in the Phoenix metro area or you're out there listening via the web. All of you folks that have been following me on Twitter, I think we're up to about 550 or something like that. It was interesting to see that when I mapped out where everyone was, the vast majority of people were not in Phoenix. So that's a great, you know, anybody that's looking to try to extend their brand or reach out to people outside of their little local area. Unlike anything else, Facebook, anything else, Twitter, it's amazing. And a huge number of those people that learned about us through Twitter are now subscribing to the newsletter and listening to this radio show. And so those of you out there, if you haven't gotten on it and tried it and understand it, it's one of those things. Social media can only be learned by doing. You can't approach it like you do, you know, from a business standpoint. You're trying to A, B, C, D, your objectives. You just got to just jump in there. I sent out a Twitter feed last week, a tweet. The CEO of Zappos had 10 reasons why every CEO should be playing with Twitter right now. Very compelling. And so if you want to see that, all you have to do is sign up for a free Twitter account. Start following me at the Data Doc. Just go search for that. You connect, and then you can see all of the stuff that I sent out, and you'll see that link. So it's almost like, even though you weren't there when I did it live, you can go back and see everything that I've done because you're now following. So it's just a phenomenal communication tool. It's been pretty amazing. By the way, Joey, if you're still listening, hey, Joey, this whole discussion about netbooks, 8 to 9 year old daughter needs a new machine. Don't want to spend a lot of money. Mostly internet stuff. Hey. So Joey, if you're still listening, you probably fit right into that potential netbook ownership group there. That might be a viable alternative as opposed to buying a $700 or $800 or $900 desktop. Now, how far that's going to take them, don't know. You went 5 years with them, but that's from 3 to 8. This next couple of years is going to get accelerated, let's just call it. But again, your kids are probably more engaged in cloud computing than you are, so keep that in mind if you're still out there listening. Back to the phones here. Let's talk to Mark, who's actually calling about his experience as a new netbook owner. Is that right, Mark?
Yes, sir.
You have which netbook?
It's an Acer Aspire 1.
Okay, and how long have you had it?
About a month.
About a month. What kind of things do you use this thing for?
Well, I'm a telephone technician.
Okay.
I use it to upload my tickets to the vendor that I work for and surf the internet. Get email from, like you said, a web-based email like Gmail.
Okay.
I run terminal programs that program my...
get into the phone systems?
Yep.
Sure. I've done a little of that in my past. There's a reason why I don't do it now.
Well,
it's a different world for me. So okay, I get that it works for those things. What have you found that it's not good for?
Well, like you said, it doesn't have the... the CD drive.
Okay.
But I have other computers that don't have a rewritable one.
Uh-huh.
So like you said, I went out and I got one of the rewritable external drives.
Okay.
So that I could use it on the different ones. So that works, but like you said, the processing power is a little low. I think it's got an Intel, I'm not sure, Atom.
Yeah, it's these really microchips that are... Now, what kind of battery life are you getting out of this thing?
It says 2 hours. If I'm using it constantly with my air card, because it powers the air card, probably about an hour and a half.
And you're, so there's a PC card slot that you can slide in, or a you can slide in devices for, like the air card. Or are you going through USB?
USB.
Okay. Anything else? That's, you know, what is this your primary business tool, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so definitely. for leisurely activities, do you use a regular desktop computer, or do you still use this thing?
No, yeah, I use a desktop computer.
Okay. So it you have a very specific thing that it seems pretty obvious. It's well worth it for your situation, because your vocation requires you to be on the internet.
Yep.
So that works out real well.
It's got an okay storage. It's 150 gigabyte hard drive.
Uh-huh.
And it's got 1 gig of RAM.
So have you played with, like, digital photography, your photographs from your digital camera, that kind of thing, or is it more you use it for work?
Well, I have to take pictures for work and upload them.
Oh, okay.
So I just took up my camera to the USB and put them in there. I also have to scan in my documents for my work orders. I have a Road Warrior portable scanner. I'm able to scan those images in and upload them.
It's a fully functional device for you.
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, hey, thanks for chiming in. That's the kind of input we're looking for. Give me a real-world situation. Let's hear somebody that's actually using this. Forget about all the people that are talking about it on the internet, because they talk about it for 20 minutes and they go on to something else. They don't actually use these things. I want to hear from you folks that actually are using netbooks, good, bad, or indifferent. 602-277-5827 or datadoctors.com/radio. Click on the feedback or ask a question link. We'll go from there. We got another hour to go. We got our Geek Speak of the Week coming. We got to beat up Apple for lagging on this sector. We, you know, we're going to have all kinds of fun here. It is Ken and Kevin from Data Doctors and Lewis from Mac Media Inc. With more to come. Stay tuned.
The thing I'm having is I just bought a stupid wireless mouse.
But can I do that with Wi-Fi?
Now my screensaver doesn't work.
And that's the solution I'm looking for.
Yep, that would be it.
Something that they call drive-by download.
Okay, stop there.
Try to boot into something called safe mode.
Take my advice and go get this free program that is out of this world.
Eliminate those and see if the problem still persists.
Oh, that's a great idea. Okay, I didn't think about that.
Does your computer bite?
There's nothing that comes in the computer that's of any value.
Has your hard drive gone floppy?
The head whack is the thing that makes you kind of go,
"Dope!" It's time to call the Computer Corner.
We're not your daddy's computer radio show.
Is this thing on?
On News Talk 92.3, KTAR.
And welcome to hour number two of the Computer Corner. We're talking about netbooks, which is a new category of portable computer that is designed for those that primarily rely on the internet for the stuff that they want to do. They want to surf the internet. They want to use their Gmail account. Can't use Outlook Express or full-blown Outlook very well on these netbooks because the processing power is very limited. It is a computer with a frontal lobotomy. That's why it's cheaper.
You're saying it's a little slow.
It is. Well, for traditional computing functions, if you wanted to load Office 2007, you wanted to, you know, have some big Sims or some of the, you know, the gaming that's out there, the whatever it is. If you're asking that computer to load an application and run like a regular computer, you're going to be sorely disappointed. If you are, like we had a previous caller talking about, you know, he lives his life, his business life, on the internet. So this works out perfectly. He can plug in his digital camera. He can upload the photos. He can, you know, scan images. He can do all that stuff. That's great.
You know, one thing we didn't ask him, I was kind of wondering about the display quality.
The display quality actually is very good from a clarity standpoint because the screens are smaller. Think about what happens when you create these huge screens, right? It can get a little pixelated and what have you, especially if you're going lower resolution.
Lower res, yeah.
These are 10 to 12 inch screens, so they're very high resolution. The problem is, people that like me, that, you know, the vision's starting to go, you got to change the resolution to be able to read things in some cases just because the screen is smaller. So again, if you're out there considering a netbook, get your hands on one, go play with them, ask your friends, or in this case, we're trying to get as many people as possible that do have them to call in to give us their experience about good, bad, and indifferent. And again, on our website, datadoctors.com/radio, you'll see a lot of resources posted with everybody chiming in on pros and cons of netbooks. So there should be plenty of links there for you to educate yourself on whether this particular category of computers makes sense or not.
You know what you could use is a application that adjusts the the contrast of the display based on your prescription.
Now, that would be something, huh? Well, they do. I mean, there's a usability accessory in Windows that you can actually engage tools that,
yeah,
that
increase the picture size.
Yeah, or you just click on a button and it's like a magnifying glass is looking at that particular section of the screen. So
yeah, same thing on the Mac. They have universal access.
Yeah, well, the Windows people thought of it first.
I'll have to look that up.
We got to have more of those Mac versus PC kind of discussions on here, right?
Oh, yeah.
We're too nice to each other.
Just squabble back and forth all day.
So, with no further ado, however, it's time for that portion of the show that we promised edutainment. I'm not sure how entertaining we were or how educational we were, but thus far, we're now into some education with our Geek Speak of the Week. And this week's term is... Just figured the crescendo. Let that finish. Troll. T-R-O-L-L. Troll.
Not the same as everyone, mythical character.
Well, there's some relevance to that. But basically, everybody that's ever gone to a website where there's a discussion between people, if you go to whitehouse.gov, one of the reasons why they're dealing with the fact that they want feedback from the general internet world, but they're having a tough time trying to figure out how they're going to deal with trolls. You guys want to take a stab at troll?
Sure.
Go ahead. What's a troll?
It's internet slang for someone who posts controversial, inflammatory, irrelevant or off-topic messages, wherever.
Yeah,
Posts, blogs, whatever.
So you're reading through this little thing, and they're talking about this subject that you're on, and all of a sudden this guy chimes in with this, what are you talking about?
So if we're talking about PC, and then Lewis got on there and be like, PC suck, that kind of would be
it's
like
it's still relevant,
well, it's
right?
Still relevant it's still to relevant. The subject.
It's more like we're talking about, you know, computers and technology and what have you. He goes, yeah, but Chevy's rule. What's that got to do with the discussion?
You're off topic.
Right. Usually trolls of the worst variety are really just trying to get people's goats. They're trying to, they just think it's funny to get people, especially in the early days of the internet, it was all about getting newbies all upset, right? And getting them to engage. I mean, they actually get off on getting people to engage in this back and forth because they, you know, because they were irrelevant or inflammatory, that kind of thing. So trolls are a problem that... There's a lot of companies out there, a lot of different programs in work, because the troll issue, the whitehouse.gov I was talking about, one of the things that they're having a problem with is how are we going to deal with the fact that, I mean, does anything bring trolls out like politics? Right? You want to talk about inflammatory, irrelevant, off-topic slams, you're going to get that like crazy. So how do you deal with it? Well, there's a website called Slashdot, very, very high-end, very, very popular in the tech community. They had to deal with this troll issue years ago because they were one of the early kind of adopters of this. So what they did is they said, okay, well, let's let the community decide who the trolls are. And so they actually allow various members at various times to go out and start rating people's posts, right? And you rate this for relevance and what have you. And it's not based on what one person says about this particular posting. It's what a big collection of the users of the community say about that particular selection. Or that particular post. And if the post rating is below a certain number, so you can say, when I go to Slashdot, I only want to see posts that have been rated at 3 or higher. So the 2s and the 1s will never show up on your interface.
Well, a lot of these people get rank as well. I've noticed that.
Ranking, there's that kind of thing. So if the community can police it, then the community can see, okay, this guy's kind of... It's almost like they're being ostracized by the whole community. Another really cool troll technology that's out there that I was reading about it, I think on Wired or Wired Magazine, is they have technology where clearly a troll, if you take their stuff down, they're going to find another bunch of ways to try to get out there. Or people may scream... You know, censorship or what have you. That's the problem the White House is having with whitehouse.gov. I know the intention was that Obama was going to allow the internet community to engage with the presidential office through whitehouse.gov. Well, the people that are in charge of the technology are going, this is going to become a troll nightmare, right? So some of the other companies that I read that are out there that are handling this, they're doing so by clearly this inflammatory stuff. It doesn't show up for anybody but the troll. So the troll thinks that they've posted this inflammatory information, but nobody's responding to it. So they're thinking, oh, well, nobody here is going to respond to my, I'm going to go somewhere else.
Move along.
I love the internet. The crowd will police itself. That's the best way to resolve this, these issues.
Going a little off topic about that, but a little bit.
You mean a troll
in
here?
Conjunction. A little bit.
Okay.
So a lot of those troll are usually like in things like forums and things like that where people can post about
blogs.
Whatever topic.
Yeah.
There's some forums that are, you know, for a good example, a problem that exists out there, like the game World of Warcraft. Mm-hmm. They have forums where people can talk. People go in there and say, oh, yeah, you know, here's the topic and here's a link to see something else. Those links are user-initiated downloads that then download a keylogger. These companies that sell gold in the game online for people who are really that desperate to get stuff in the game.
Yep.
They do this, steal their account and hack it, and it means money to them.
Yep.
So some of it is a little bit
malicious.
More of the organized crime thing.
It's ridiculous what's going on out there. But
and then you've also seen it where it's a form of guerrilla marketing as well.
Well, there's spam. I mean, there's all those things engaged as well. But again, if the community says this particular post is bad, this particular individual is bad, the community's saying it's not one individual, I think that's the best way to go. So all you trolls out there, you know who you are.
Crowdsourcing
the troll policing, yes. With that, we're going to go to break. It is the Computer Corner. Ken and Kevin from Data Doctors and Lewis from Mac Media, Inc. back right after this. Are you a nut if you buy a netbook? Or are you a nut if you buy a notebook? Is it netbook or notebook? Which one is it for you? Apples or oranges? Apples or not apples? We're talking about the difference between these new generation netbooks, which are primarily designed for internet usage, and a traditional notebook. And we were looking for as much feedback from the crowd, the wisdom of the crowd, and we've got a little wisdom from Dave, who recently took a long trip with a netbook. And Dave, you're going to share that experience with us, yeah?
Yes.
What did you buy?
I bought a Asus 1000H EPC.
EPC.
A lot of
E's. like three or four E's in there, doesn't it?
Yep. Yeah, it came equipped pretty well, but I needed a little bit more for my trip. So I threw a 320 gig hard drive in there, which was like $89, and a $29 stick of 2 gigs of RAM.
So you upgraded it, and you ended up spending a total of just over $500, $550, something like that?
Yeah, just a little over 500, and I already had a copy of Vista, and I threw that on there. I always like it better now for the connectivity.
Did you buy the laptop with no operating system on it?
I came with XP Home.
I see. Okay, you just wanted it to have Vista on there.
I was Vista. I use Lightroom, and for my photography, and it just kept the pretty basic. But I was able to update my blog, download my photos.
And you said you're using Lightroom?
I'm using Adobe Lightroom.
And it worked okay? It was not too slow?
No, I found it very usable.
Okay. And so where did you go? You went on a trip somewhere, didn't you?
Yeah, I went to Africa for 2 weeks.
That's like right around the corner here, isn't it?
Yeah, I ended up taking about 150 gigs a shot.
No kidding. How was that?
I needed the room.
So now this is a fairly small form factor, right?
Yeah, and the beauty of that for me is I do a lot of photography trips, and I can throw this right in my backpack. They make a very small Pelican case that's just 12 inches that this fits right into.
Perfect, huh? How about, did you use it on the plane going over?
Yeah, I got 6 hours of battery life in it, and I was able to use my digital download movies and Blockbuster rentals.
And I'll bet you didn't have the problem when the person before in front of you reclined their seat, you had no shot at using your laptop.
Nope, I was able to use it in coach class.
Yeah, you get those big, beautiful screens, right? These big notebooks. That person in front of you decides to recline their chair. Man, it's ugly.
The time I went, I took a 17-inch laptop, and I said that was the last time I took.
Well, yeah, not only that. I mean, you feel like a pack mule hauling that thing through the airport, right? Just a big, heavy case.
This was a bigger trip, but quite often I backpack, and this is perfect for backpacking.
Super. All right. Now you're back in the States. You're back on U.S. soil. How often and when do you use this netbook?
Right now, I kind of take it around with me if I know I'm traveling around for the day on business. And I think it's quite easy to park across the street or, you know, in the parking lot if somebody has Wi-Fi and pick up the internet real quick if you got some time to kill. But, I use it to keep with me when I'm taking pictures.
But it's not your primary machine back here.
No, I have a desktop at home with all the bells and whistles.
Okay, and that was the perspective I want to make sure people understood, because that's the most common. There's two things. There's people that actually work on the internet, and I thank you so much for your input and help there with that, Dave. There are the people that work on the internet that it's clearly a great tool for work. But it's still not their primary when they really want to get down and dirty and have some fun, right?
Well, especially if you're a business supplying the laptop, obviously they're looking at cost. And if it's capable of doing everything they need to, like the gentleman that called before,
right,
who was just...
Yeah, as long as you don't have special arrangements with like VPNs and things like that that will or may not work. I mean, there's all those issues. If you are a business owner out there and you have a mobile workforce, it is well worth your time to experiment with these things to see if this is... Again, if your primary needs for your people is the cloud computing model, where most of what they're doing is through an internet connection, very little of what's actually on the local computer is important, it may very well be worth doing that. Because you also then have the issue of when there's a problem, you just wipe it and restart. Because there's nothing on the laptop that matters, it shouldn't matter when you wipe out the laptop. So there's a lot of levels of productivity and improvement that may come for corporate users. Heavy-duty road warriors, forget about it. Forget about it. Not going to do it. There's way too much that you need to do that this thing, you'll want to throw it out the window. 600 miles an hour. All right, we got another half an hour to go. We appreciate everybody that's called in so far. A couple lines open, 602-277-5827. More wisdom about netbooks, great. Any questions you have about technology, great. We're here for you, the Data Doctors and Lewis from Mac Media. You can join us online as well, datadoctors.com/radio, and you'll see this week's offerings, including all the resources for how you might navigate the whole netbook question your own self. If you're a subscriber to our weekly newsletter, you'll have already gotten these tips and tricks and stories, and if you're not... You can go to our website and see what we send out before you subscribe, or just subscribe. datadoctors.com/help. It's our free help center there. You'll see a couple of different places where you can subscribe to our newsletter. Last night's newsletter went out as a tip on using fashion. Fashion your Firefox. You really want to step it up there and have these beautiful, you know, you want to customize Firefox. There's a bunch of add-ons that are all free from Firefox. So I got a link to that. A reminder, we've had this before, but it's such a common problem. If you've got intermittent issues, if you've got a computer that's acting weird for no reason, no rhyme or reason, it doesn't do it every time you do certain things, it's just completely intermittent. Those are the most difficult types of computer problems to solve. I mean, the ones that probably generate the most grief for all of us, yeah? Especially at the on the bench.
When you can't replicate it?
Well, when there's no rhyme or reason. It's the easiest problem in the world to fix is the one where if I click in this and do this, I get this error. Boom. And it happens every time. I got somewhere to go. Because then when I try something to fix it, I'll know whether I fixed it or not. If it's intermittent, I did something, it hasn't shown up. Well, is it that it hasn't shown up because it's fixed, or is it hasn't shown up yet? And it's going to show up. A rookie mistake. So those, you know, we got a lot of people out there that are that are listening to this show that are just getting into the business, my 20th year in the business. Let me give you a little wisdom, guys, that are out there trying to help others with their computers. When there's an intermittent problem, do not make the rookie mistake that most rookies make, which is diving right into the system and starting to pull stuff out and reload Windows and all this stuff. Take the time to examine the motherboard. Pop the cover on this thing, and I have links in this week's newsletter that'll show you specifically what to look for. There's this issue of blown capacitors, caps that basically... And it won't be blown like a firecracker blew up and you see it, it's obvious.
Just a little bulge.
Yeah, the top of the cap that's supposed to be flat, right? And it should almost have like a cross across the top that's perfectly flat. It's almost like the Jiffy Pop popcorn, right? Starts to bulge a little bit. Or you'll see some of the electrolytic whatever stuff it's called, the material that's inside actually has leaked out. What ends up happening is your computer will still run. It'll just do some crazy things.
Freeze up, turn off, restart,
whatever it is. But it doesn't do it all the time, and it doesn't do it consistently. It has to do with the way electricity flows through the system or what have you. So I think that's a very valuable thing in this week's newsletter, especially for those of you that are asked to troubleshoot systems. And I know, you know, in these downtimes, there's not an IT person at the company. It's just the guy that's shown the most wisdom about computers is tagged as the IT guy, right? And no training, no nothing, just try to help us. If you've got an intermittent problem out there, don't forget. That's the first thing, because if you ignore that and you spend all this time reloading Windows, you're not going to fix anything.
Ken's going to teach you how to use a soldering gun.
No. Generally speaking, you get blown caps on a motherboard, it's time to replace it. Our Geek Speak of the Week is in there, and there's a security story about they figured out how to sniff keystrokes from 50 to 100 feet away with a laser gun. The laser pointer.
What?
Yeah. Yeah, the big security conference that's going on wherever it is this week.
Will that sniff your bank account as well when you're at an ATM?
Yeah, PIN numbers, that kind of thing.
What about a phone number at a club?
You know,
or?
I think you're going to have to read the story, aren't you?
I guess.
That could be positive.
As well as the opinion column that I pointed to, the John Dvorak's 9 Reasons Why Email is Dead. So it's a pretty lively newsletter this week. So
there was something pretty significant that was announced this week.
Which was?
The iPhone 3.0 update.
Yeah, it was announced, but they're going to come out with it in summer.
Well, I happen to have it on my phone.
Do you have the beta? Are you a beta guy?
I'm a beta guy.
Does the copy and paste actually work?
Copy and paste is wonderful.
Okay, the other pet peeve I have with them, why can't I search my email?
You can now.
Yes!
You know what irritated me?
I'm suddenly in love with the iPhone again.
I'll have to get you a beta.
MMS, pictures.
Yes.
You couldn't receive them. You have to go to some stupid website. Now you can do it on the phone.
There you have it. All is well in the world. The folks at Apple listen to me. Yeah, it was me, right?
It's the petition you put together.
Yeah, exactly. No, it was just me gritting my teeth all the time when I'm on the phone. Monica joins us now with a little more wisdom of the crowds when it comes to netbooks.
Hi there.
Hi, Monica. Thanks for calling in and tell us about your netbook experience.
I got it in January. I had had an old Dell for about 5 years, and I was just like, don't need it anymore. I want something new.
Okay.
So my husband mentioned a netbook, and I'm like, what the heck is that? So considering what I do at home, it's like all I need is internet and email.
Okay.
And then I recently got addicted to Facebook and playing Mafia Wars. So like that's all I really need it for. I teach school, so like the heavy-duty stuff I do on my desktop there,
okay.
So I really don't do anything at home. Then the other thing I noticed it was useful for, being a busy mom, I have to take the kids to lessons. Well, you end up sitting there for like 30 minutes, so you can take the netbook with you and do whatever you want to do. I was on spring break the last couple of weeks. Oh, I need to go upstairs and clean my closet. Oh, well, I'm going to take the netbook with me so I can keep up with what's going on Facebook.
Well, hold on. You can actually update your Facebook page and clean the closet at the same time?
I can.
That is multitasking. Is that multitasking? That is multitasking.
I love it because I could fold a few things and then check back and see how much energy I had left to do
now. Are you reporting the blow by blow on your Facebook page about, oh, there goes another pair of underwear?
No.
So you have more of a life than that.
Right, and then okay. And then it's kind of nice because I've reconnected with people from high school, and you know you can.
No, absolutely. You're preaching to the choir here on Facebook. We love it. Yeah,
it's nice. Yeah. And it's very portable and it's easy. The only thing I don't like.
Uh oh.
Still getting on my nerves. And you might be able to help me with this.
All right, we'll see.
The shift key on the right hand side. I've got the little
EPC. Yeah.
Yeah. So, my pinky isn't long enough to hit it because I'm a little petite person.
Uh huh.
So I end up hitting the arrow up.
Ah.
So when I'm chatting and I try to capitalize something, it would go to the beginning. So now I just don't capitalize anything.
Yeah, why bother?
Yeah.
No one else on the internet seems to care about grammar.
Right.
No need for punctuation.
Right? Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, I.
But here's a very important thing for anybody out there looking to get a netbook. Netbooks are smaller. The keyboards are smaller. You need to look at those little things like that and actually type on it as if you were using it, right? Because that would have been a neat thing for you to figure out, okay, this is a problem.
Right. Well, and I did, but I didn't, like, try to do any type of word processing.
Yeah.
But
it was too exciting, wasn't it? Oh, look at this thing. It's so fun.
It's so cute.
Yeah,
well,
and
I went with the 10-inch screen, the 10.5. I wouldn't go to the 8.
Yeah, it's too small, isn't it?
Nothing, but I love it because I can take it with me, and I'm surprised at how well the battery life.
What is your average battery life?
Oh gosh, I've never let it run down, but I think probably it's got to be over 2 hours.
Okay, well, the newer generation, it's one of the reasons why I'm starting to, because I was a big pundit of these things going, it's a fad, it's the wrong, you know, it's just, do you really need something that's between an iPhone and a desktop computer or a laptop? And it turns out, yeah, a lot of people are finding a real big use for this thing. But one of the biggest issues I had was the actual battery life. The newer generation units that I'm seeing reviews on, they're talking about 5 and 6 hours.
Yeah, I think whenever we were doing the research, it was saying advertising at least 4 hours.
Yeah, well, and you're.
I think I've run it more than that.
You're an early adopter. You're helping us all understand. See, I'm as much as I talk about this for 20 years, I'm one of the few guys that'll go out there. I mean, I waited till the iPhone was the second generation, right? I'm waiting for a couple million other people to go cut their teeth on these netbooks before I decide to buy one.
Yeah, well, you know, and like I said, I don't do a lot of heavy duty things. I didn't even pay for Office. It's got work. But like I said, I do that type of, you know, word processing, Excel stuff at school anyway.
So now are you doing any of that on the netbook?
No.
Okay.
Because for me, it's just strictly entertainment. But if I want to write something down, yeah, I can put it into work.
So if you're not familiar with this, I'll give you a little tip since you're a netbook user. The cloud version of Microsoft Office that you might want to try is Google Docs.
Oh, okay.
I mean, full-blown spreadsheets and Word documents and everything, but it's all through the web.
Okay.
And then what's really cool about it is, you know, you're a teacher. If you're doing a collaborative discussion with somebody, you can invite them to actually participate in the updates of the document. So it's really quite cool. It's not a replacement, in my opinion, for Microsoft Office. But for somebody that does rely on a netbook a lot, that does have the need to collaborate, that's one of those. A lot of people don't realize that Google Docs is out there. So if nothing else, we'll get a few people to go crack one of them open.
That would be great because what I end up having to do is send documents to myself over the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if it was just all in one place, I wouldn't have to keep doing that.
If you don't
transfer from home to work.
Yeah, so if you don't have a Google account, go sign up for one and start playing with Google Docs.
And I was actually going to call a couple of weeks ago to ask about this. Is there a way that you can download a program to maybe reset that up arrow key and turn it into a shift key?
That gets into some very deep level operating system goodies, and I wouldn't recommend you did it because even if you could get it to work, next time you do an update or change or what have you, probably go back to the proper setting. So, yeah, it's one of those things that you're going to have to train yourself. It's kind of like voice recognition.
Oh.
Voice recognition only works if you're willing to go through the training, and that's why so many people, you know, they start with it and they go, forget it, it's too much work.
Awesome.
Yeah, you just need to train your fingers, and whether that means you have to release like you normally wouldn't or what have you. But if you're going to use that particular unit, you're going to have to conform to its design. There's really no way to get around that.
I would just say if you use your laptop for just mostly entertainment, and I'm not running like mega games or anything on there, perfect.
It's
absolutely
working.
Perfect, and you can take it with you anywhere.
Two thumbs up and a bunch of laundry from Monica. Thanks for calling in, Monica.
Have a good weekend.
You too, and that's exactly what this show was supposed to be about.
Sounds like she needs an armband for that thing.
I want her to call back and say, okay, I worked the spreadsheet, got the kids' stuff graded, and got my Facebook page done while I was cleaning out the closet this week. The ultimate multitasker. We got more multitasking of our own to do here. Stay tuned for more. And thanks for everybody that has called in so far and participated in this week's show. I love it when the users help the users. It's a beautiful thing, isn't it? Start to tear up sometimes. If you are in the market for a netbook, you will do no better than checking the resources we've got posted. And if you're just joining in, you can hear the show in its entirety after we get it all edited and uploaded and whether you you can actually download our podcast through iTunes, or you can just go to datadoctors.com/radio for the most recent edition, and then link back to, I think we have 6 or 7 years worth of radio shows posted up there. So if you really have nothing better to do, you could really spend a lot of time listening to us.
Yeah.
Don't forget CNN.com/live on Saturday mornings, about 9:30 Pacific, 12:30 Eastern time. I do a live segment with CNN, and then you can also see the archive of the segment. This morning we talked about the question that Bob, a couple of weeks ago, somebody asked about how to get their church set up so that they can broadcast their services. And so I discussed that on CNN this morning. That was my advice column this weekend as well. So lots for you to do there. Now, speaking of users helping users, Brandon just went through a bunch of pain. We want others to learn from Brandon's pain. Yeah?
Okay. All right.
So
we'll
you have a Windows Vista machine. Everything was great. And you decided, hey, you know what? I'm going to kick it up a notch. I'm going to go get me one of these TV tuner cards.
That's right.
And?
I had one before in my Windows 2000 machine. Loved it. You know, wanted to be able to watch live television while I'm there. I actually have a dual monitor set up, so I thought, you know, how great.
Yeah.
You know, I'll be able to watch television on one monitor, do my other application work on the other. Got the purchased a video card that specifically said compatible with Vista, and loaded it in the machine, got ready to go, fired it up, and went into Windows Media Center, you know, the highlight of Vista, and went to TV. And got a message, TV tuner card not recognized. And, you know, the first thing any good, you know, a computer person does is you hop on Google and you put it in quotes, the exact phrase, so you can see everybody else's pain with the problem.
Go, Brandon. Go, Brandon.
What I come to find out is, yes, compatible with Vista, absolutely, and all of their TV tuner cards released since 2007 compatible with Vista, yet this manufacturer has never made a commitment to make the TV tuner portion.
Oh, so what they're saying is the video card portion, the part that actually displays video, is compatible with Vista.
It's beautiful. Everything works great.
They just conveniently left out the fact that the TV tuner section of this particular video card, if you have Vista, ain't going to work.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I bought a bicycle, and the primary need for the bicycle was to be able to ride it, yet it didn't come with the wheels.
Right. Well, yeah. Well, what
works.
Did you expect?
The steering works. Everything works except the wheels, which, you know, keep the bike from going.
Hello. So, the word of wisdom from Brandon today about those of you that have a Vista machine that are considering one of these, what is it you said, All-in-Wonder?
Yeah, the All-in-Wonder product.
The ATI All-in-Wonder card. Even though the box says that it's Vista compatible, and you're saying nowhere in the fine print of the box or anything else does it say, except for the tuner card.
No. Only in all of the hard searched forums on Google where people are discovering the same thing.
That is an amazing thing for a company the size of ATI that they wouldn't have addressed this one way or the other.
And it's since 07. I mean, from what I found, none of their tuner cards work with Vista yet.
Well, you know, maybe they think Vista's, a fad.
Let's wait till we get
30 million.
I actually have a Linux build that's on disk, and so I'm going to do a little searching around and see, you know, maybe I have to, boot into some other, roll back to XP, do a dual boot or something like that if I want to have it work.
I got another suggestion, Mr. Techie Guy. Buy a cheap little TV and put it next to your computer. You're going to go through all these rigmaroles, and it's still going to, you know.
He's determined to make it work.
I'm going to make this work. But I appreciate you chiming in.
You did
two things. You warned people about the situation, that they might have entered into with this situation, and you further exposed why us technical people are just out of our minds.
There you go. And if anybody comes up with an answer, users helping users.
There you go.
I could run an alternate tuner application or something, you know.
Yeah, you're getting a little too far out there. Those aren't my users.
Well, hey, good talking to you.
Thank you, Brandon. Appreciate it. And again, that's very helpful. That's it's kind of a vertical market situation. Not everybody out there is going to be in that situation. But those of you out there that were considering it, hopefully we got to one or two people with that, and that's all we can hope for. So We appreciate all the participation. Lewis, how do they reach you during the week if they have a Mac question?
MacMediaInc.com.
MacMediaInc.com. A couple locations here in town?
Certainly.
20 locations of Data Doctors in the Phoenix metro area and about 50 of them around the country. So datadoctors.com if you want more of the Data Doctors love throughout the week. Kevin, thank you. Lewis, thank you. And all you folks that chimed in, netbooks versus notebooks. It's up to you to decide if you're in the market for one of these new machines, but pretty compelling stories today, huh? So if you're in that market, check it out. See y'all next week.